Scott and Hayden really complex, and Lucena Furbringer really simple. Lucena is blocked by Sean Scott. Scott is listed as 6'5". He's one of the shortest big blockers in the world, but you think technically he's darn good.
He's the technically best blocker, and even regardless of technicality, he's probably the number three blocker on tour right now.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Paper Courts Podcast. I am your host, per usual, Travis Mawerder. I have a really, really fun podcast for you guys. We're keeping it old school. Last week we had Todd Rogers. This week we are bringing in Sean Scott, the old partner of John Hayden, when the two were pretty much the only two who could challenge Dahlhauser and Rogers and Jake Gibb and Sean Rosenthal. We'll talk a little bit about everything today, namely his partnership with Hayden and just how good they were as a pretty small team. So listen in, enjoy, and I appreciate you guys listening.
I grew up on the other side of the island, and I wasn't an Outrigger member, so those guys were privileged and raised with a silver spoon. No, I'm just kidding. I was on the other side of the island. I was an Outrigger member. I joined, became a full member. full member after high school. They let me in as a temporary member after my senior year to play at the Junior Olympics, and then I went on a wait list and then joined, I think, shortly thereafter, and have been a member, you know, all through college, or most of college, and then since then.
Okay.
So I didn't grow up going to the, you know, spending my childhood at the Outrigger and playing on the baby court. So my exposure to the sport was all indoor to start. When I was done with college, I played, there was a local guy, a friend of mine, who was a really good beach player, and he asked me to play in this local tournament they had there, and I didn't really know anything about beach, but he kind of was telling me what to do and where to be on the court, and we ended up winning. I was like, oh, that was pretty cool. So I played with him that summer, and then after that moved up to California because that's where all the best players were, and wanted to try to make a run at being a professional beach volleyball player. I played 1 year in Switzerland indoor, and I tried out for another team in Japan, and then made the final three, but didn't make the final cut. And then I just kind of got, you know, into beach and focusing on that full time. So I think I realized early that if I wanted to be successful, then I kind of had to put all my energies and efforts into the sport. I wasn't, athletically gifted enough to just go play overseas indoor and then come back and, you know, dabble in the beach. It was really highly competitive, and so if I wanted to do beach, I figured I had to focus full-time on just that.
Okay. And what was it, what was the tour like? So you made your debut in, I believe, 97. What was the tour like back then? And I guess, were there qualifiers? Because one of the toughest things I had to find is when qualifiers first started. Because I know back, you know, in like the 70s and 80s, Manhattan Beach Open would have like 150-some teams because there were no qualifiers. So when you started, did you have to go through a qualifying process, or was it just kind of a straight-to-main draw?
No, so they had a qualifying process, and actually had a qualifier tour. So you would play on the qualifier tour for a summer, and then the top six athletes per gender would gain, you'd get essentially a wild card or year pass into all the events the following year. And then at the end of the year, if you had enough points, you were in. And if you didn't, then you'd have to go back to Q school, I guess. but they also had open qualifiers for the events that you could participate in. So I did a bit of both.
And now you started, I pulled up your DVD, it looks like you started with Stein. Had you known him growing up out in Hawaii?
We went to high school together, so I met him in high school, and then we played my junior and senior year. We were on the same indoor team, and then ended up playing Junior Olympics together at Outrigger. So when I moved out to California from Hawaii, then I didn't really know anyone, so I kind of, Albert Hanneman and Stein Metzger and kind of people that I knew, I'd reach out to them and they'd help me get some practices and get in with some some guys in practice and stuff. So
started kind of right after college. I'm sure that there was a bit of a learning curve from that transition from indoor to beach. When did you realize that you were getting pretty good at beach and that, you know, this is something that you could do as a job?
I mean, it took a while. I was doing a lot of odd end jobs here and there, you know, working a lot in the off season to pay for my volleyball during season. And then the ADP was also going through some financial ups and downs. So it took a while. There was never it wasn't very off, very early on for me. So, but I enjoyed it and I liked the travel and competing and training. So it was more of a, it was more of just kind of part of my lifestyle and my life at that point. So I'd work and play volleyball and kind of wanted to give it a good enough shot to see how well I could do. And I, you know, started to get a little better and better. So I was like, okay, I'm going in the right direction. So I'll stick with it to see what, where I could go with it.
I'd say it worked out pretty well. What were some of these odd jobs that you're working? Just because I know that just from talking to other volleyball players, it's just funny to see the different places that they landed to kind of fund the dream.
Yeah, I mean, I worked as a valet. I worked as a busboy and a waiter. I painted houses. I taught volleyball lessons. I worked for a payphone company, an ATM company. That was probably I think I worked for them for about 7 to 8 years. But yeah, so those are kind of the various jobs. And then, you know, you would do, if there was a volleyball camp that was available where you could go and make a little extra money, or go early and do a clinic or something, coach youth club volleyball and stuff like that. I kind of did a little bit of everything.
It looks like in 2002, you and Todd Rogers formed a partnership that would go on to be very successful. How did that one come about forming? And, you know, I know that Todd was still kind of on the up and up at the time too. So did you know at the time that you were playing with, you know, a guy who would go on to become one of the best defenders in United States history, if not the best U.S. defender?
Well, I mean, Todd and Dax were, you know, a phenomenal team. And on the court, they went from the bigger court to the smaller court, as, you know, it is currently. I think they both saw the writing on the wall and were like, we need to get a blocker. So Todd had a tryout. There were a few of us that he practiced with for a little bit to kind of, before making a decision on who he wanted to play with. And then I got the call. And so we, you know, started traveling around the world and playing both domestically and internationally in events. And I mean, I knew early on he was, when I had played with him, I think he and Dax were already rookie of the year. They had won on the international tour. They won domestically. Like, they were already a dominant team. They had won coming up through, you know, CBVA tournaments, amateur tournaments. So I knew the level or the capabilities of Todd, you know, early on.
So tell me about this tryout. So, like, was it just like a practice and, you know, everyone just kind of got a shot to play with Todd? But I guess, who else was he kind of debating between?
If I remember, I know, so basically he just set up practices with various athletes, if I remember correctly. So he and I would go practice a couple of days and kind of see how we did as a team against other teams, kind of evaluate the chemistry maybe a little bit. And then also I think Jeff Nygaard, I can't recall who else was on, but there were like three or four blockers that he kind of practiced. And there was no, it was all out in the open. We knew that Todd and Dax were splitting up and they were both kind of looking for partners going forward. Both wanted to have a blocker, you know, now that the court was smaller and kind of blocking was paramount. So we all just sort of like, yeah, I'll practice. And while I was practicing him, I was always also practicing with some other athletes, just kind of trying to keep my options open. And that, I think it's pretty standard in the sport. There's a lot of, I mean, even this year with our women's team, there's a lot of people kind of practicing with different partners, trying to pair up and see who they fit well with and who they might be able to grow with as a team and be successful with.
And were you considering playing with Dax at all? And because I know that lefties are always in hot demand, especially a 6'3" lefty who had won.
I think I'm trying to remember. You'd have to talk with him, but I think he and Fenoy had paired up. I don't remember exactly how it went down. Todd might have some different information, but I'm just telling you how I remember it. But it was a long time ago, so.
This is true. And in 2004 and 2005, I mean, you start winning fairly regularly. I mean, you win five times over those two seasons alone, and you're in the semis or the finals, you know, most of the time, at the very least the quarterfinals. Was that pretty much, I guess, well, did anything change in your or Todd's game, like, that made you kind of just make that leap from a, you know, a quarterfinalist or, you know, round of 16 to winning and then the semis? And I guess, was that the end of the bus boy jobs and kind of the odd jobs that you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, once I started traveling with Todd internationally, then I think that helped my development as a player personally. I also started to get a bit healthier. I was battling back injuries early on. And so once I got a little healthier, was able to train and, you know, compete more consistently, travel internationally and compete against some really good competition and make a little more money so I didn't have to work as many odd-end jobs. I could focus a bit more on the sport and rehab and that kind of stuff. I think it just all went hand-in-hand with the results. But I think I came back after my first season competing internationally, still worked for the payphone company for one more year, and then after that I stopped and just focused on beach volleyball.
Okay. And when you started traveling internationally, I know that pretty much most guys who travel internationally, it's Olympics are always in the back of their mind, and I know that you were the first spot out in 2000, was it 2004 or 2008?
2004.
So when did the Olympics start to kind of sneak into your mind as something that was a possibility?
I think with Todd and I traveling, that it was always kind of a possibility. And then I think some of the teams in front of us kind of split apart, and then about 2 years out, and it really became a possibility. So we were traveling with intent to try to qualify for 2004, but unfortunately we came up a little short. We qualified, we were good enough to go, but due to country quota, we were the third team out, so missed going to Athens.
So the pretty much the same thing that happened with trying high this year. Had a good enough to go, but just the country quota got them.
Yeah, exactly, same thing.
And then when you partnered up with, and I know that you had a couple partners in between, but when you partnered up with Lucena, how did that one come about? And I guess, what changes have you seen in Nick's game from then until now? Because I know that obviously he's progressed a great deal.
Yeah, I think from the get-go, and I would tell him this when we were training leading up the season, that he was one of the most athletic people out there. I mean, definitely, hands down, was the quickest.
Yeah.
It just was a matter of him, you know, I think it was more of just becoming confident in his abilities and mentally developing as a player to be more consistent, because definitely physically, he could get to any shot, pretty much any shot that he wanted to, because he was so quick. So I think for him, I've seen him just develop more his mental side. He's always physically been a great athlete, but just kind of learning to be more consistent and control his emotions and not be so up and down, but a little bit more be able to weather the storm when things aren't going your way. Just stay with it and keep training, and over the long haul, he'll win out.
Okay. And have you kind of seen him make those changes now that, just watching him and Phil were, I would say, the second best team in the world behind Allison and Bruno this year. So did you think that he kind of made those adjustments that you were talking about, just the mental side of the game?
Yeah, I think he started to look at it too. He started to look at it more big picture, I guess, kind of to see with the whole everything, that it wasn't so here, like this point right here, right now, is going to define everything about my success as a player, my career, my chance to do this or that. And also focused on, okay, I'm also trying to make a living at the sport. He got married, has a son, and that definitely, tends to put things in perspective as well. I don't know if you have any kids, but once you have kids, you kind of start to realize it's not all about you. And there's some people out there that you're doing things for, and you kind of have a love that you didn't know existed before. So your focus becomes, it's a bigger picture. And so you can kind of, I think, roll with the ups and downs of the sport a bit more. So it's been an enjoyable for me to watch, because Nick's one of my best friends on the B circuit, and to have the chance to play with him was, a pleasure. That was one of my funnest years, traveling and competing with him, and then getting to see him now working at USA Vol, getting to see his development and making it to Rio and in 2016, and really watching him compete, and really fun and enjoyable for me.
You talked about how a family puts a lot of things in perspective, and that you have a family of your own, obviously. So when did you start having a family, and did that change your outlook on the game at all? And I know that just having that beach and personal life balance is always tough, just in terms of like scheduling. First of all, it is always hard just with how much volleyball players are traveling. And two, well, I guess this probably wasn't so much an issue with you, but as it is with current athletes, but with funding, because back when you were playing, there was decent money on the AVP tour. So what was the beach kind of family life balance for you?
So for me, my wife Rachel Walkholder was trying to qualify for 2008. And then as soon as they didn't make it, for the same reason, they were good enough, but, fell short due to country quota. Then we always knew that as soon as that kind of run was over for her, we wanted to start a family, because we both wanted to be parents, and we were both getting to the age where if we wanted to have a family, it was kind of, we needed to get started. So as soon as that happened in 2008, then we started trying to have a family. My son was born in 2009, April 2009. And then she focused on being a mom, and I was still playing, so I would focus on volleyball because I was the only breadwinner. And it did definitely change my outlook on the sport. I still enjoy competing and training, but it was easier for me to maybe push through the hard times or the difficult times, because I knew I was doing it for, it wasn't just about me. Like, I had other people depending on me and needing me to be successful.
Right.
But it definitely also added another level of pressure or things that mentally, I had to do a good job of wrapping my head around, in terms of, even though those pressures of having a family and providing don't go away, I had to be able to kind of put those on shelf, go and focus on competing, and then, pick them up when I was done, take them back off the shelf and deal with them then. So it forces you, whether you want to or not, to grow up and be more mature about things.
I'm sure. And I'm assuming that you guys kind of met just crossing paths on the AVP over the years.
Yeah, we had known each other, you know, from or known of each other, but hadn't really spent any time. And then in Montreal, the international event, we ended up sitting in the players' lounge watching Kevin, and then went and watched Kevin Wong and Simon Messier compete. And during their game, just struck up a conversation, and then kind of went from there.
Okay. And now 2009 too, when you and Rachel were talking about starting having a family, that's when you and John became partners, right?
Yeah, around there. And John, for me, it was I was playing with Nick. John was playing with Brad Keenan, and then John, Brad, and Nick decided to play together. So John and I were like, okay, let's play together. And we had
just talked
about playing together. Yeah, we had talked about playing together years before, but it never seemed to work out. When John would say, hey, do you want to play together? I would like have a good finish with my current partner, and then maybe then I'd go to him a few weeks later and say, hey, you know, what do you think about playing together? And he'd have a good finish, and I'd go, hold off, let's wait. But we kind of could never really, the timing never worked. And then this, when both of our partners went together, I remember I was on in vacation on Hawaii, it was off season, and so then we chatted and said, yeah, let's play together, and it ended up working out well for both of us.
I'd say so. And I think that, you know, of all the very successful partnerships that you've had, maybe just because it's because it's really the most recent, but that your career is kind of always will be associated with your partnership with John. What made you guys so good?
Well, I think one, we were both coming and looked at it from the same perspective. Like, we were both very mature, took it as a job. We enjoyed training and competing. So we were professionals about how we prepared, how we competed, and how we, you know, did the rehab and stuff. And so I also think our styles, so we had a good base to go from in terms of what we wanted to get out of the sport and what we were willing to do to get there. So that made it easy rather than a partnership where one person's pulling the other, pushing the other, and there's not a lot of cohesion. We had that from the start. And then we kind of have the same mentality on our theories of how things should work on the court and looking for adjustments and strategies. So it was pretty easy to talk about that as well. I don't know. And then we just kind of both competed hard. So I don't know.
You mentioned that you both wanted the same things out of the sport. What were some of those goals that you guys had that were well aligned with one another?
Well, I mean, we both were trying to support a family, so we wanted to be financially successful. We both are both very highly competitive, so we wanted to win. We both were at an older or a latter part in our careers where we knew, obviously, we couldn't play forever, and we needed to prepare and rehab in a certain way. So I think for us going into it, it was something that we both enjoyed and knew that there weren't, like, we couldn't do it forever. And so one of our goals was, like, if we stopped, we knew it wasn't like, oh, we'll stop, and if the AVP comes back next year, then we'll restart up. We were too old. We knew that if we wanted to keep playing, we had to keep doing it. Because our bodies were just getting too old. And so we took every opportunity as a chance to kind of to win and make money. And so I think every tournament we went into, we prepared. And I think that was some of the reason, or a big reason, why we were successful, because we were very professional about how we were at practice, how we were, whether it was competing in a CBVA event or a ABP Manhattan Beach Open, you know, we took it really serious when we stepped on the court.
And when you guys were obviously really, really good right off the bat. How come, I guess, what was the discussion like when you talked about playing internationally? Was that ever a part of the discussion? Because I think that, you know, with how good you guys were, you definitely could have given the London Olympics a pretty good run had you guys, you know, chosen to do so. So I guess what went into the decision making to just stay local?
I think it was family, where we're at in our careers, and also financial. I mean, due to the country quota and neither of us having points, we would have had to start in a country quota, then play in the qualifier, then to get into main draw. So like in Quebec, we went and played. We had to play in a country quota. We won that game. We had to play in the qualifier. We won, got through the qualifier. In the first round, we had to play Cottonville. And
that's brutal.
Then John ended up getting hurt. So we pulled out of Phil and against Phil and Todd, and then played the game after that. But then we also had to get back to play in a domestic tournament for the domestic tour. And we had some sponsorship obligations that we had to meet for that as well, which, you know, again, we're, volleyball's fun and it's great, but if we weren't making a living, it didn't make any sense as both being married and having families and mortgages. So, yeah, I think if there were a different system and we had the opportunities, and some people might say, well, you have to respect the grind, that's what you have to do. But I had already done it. I had gone international. I, you know, had some success here and there, and, you know, barely missed the Olympics. And I didn't know, based on the level of support and all this other stuff, traveling overseas again with a family and a mortgage with very minimal support or ability to get entry into events didn't make much sense for us.
Right. And when the ABP went down, so back half of the 2010 season was canceled, and then 2011, you know, there's no ABP. In 2012, there's barely a semblance of the ABP. Did you kind of see the writing on the wall there? Was that kind of just to a situation where you're like, okay, you know, it's about time to get out and do something else?
Yeah, well, so for me, the thought process was, again, because of where I was at age-wise, there wasn't the option to stop and let's just go do this and come back. Like, there's no way I could let my body. Like, I remember talking to Karch a long time ago and saying, like, how did you keep competing for so long? It's like, you don't stop. Like, you never stop training. There's no real off-season where, like, oh, I'm going to take 6 months off and just go surfing. No, like, you have to stay on top of it and be diligent about it. You can't eat whatever you want and just go on vacation like when you were in your 20s and then come back and you lose 10 pounds in 3 days. And, you know, you just – so for me, when the ABP went under, John and I were, you know, kind of in off-season training and had to have a sit-down discussion and say, hey, what's going on here? Are we going to – and there was a point where we thought about stopping. I remember after practice, we were sitting on the bumper of our cars saying, what are we doing here? You know, what does the next year look like? What's going to be available for us to compete? And we both just made a conscious decision to say, all right, we're going to do this, and we're going to compete as if there's going to be a tour, and we're going to just trust and prepare professionally. And then if something happens, great. If not, then at that point we'll make a decision. But at least for me personally, I can't speak for John. I would have known. I did everything I wanted to or could have. And so, you know, and then we did and ended up playing in 2011-12. And then that's where, for me, the tour kind of went through another bit of a hiccup. I talked to all the different promoters, and no one seemed to have anything on the horizon for 2013. Opportunity came up with USA Volleyball to start working there, and so I just figured it was I was also dealing with some health issues and figured it was time to kind of to move on. So that's why I made the decision to stop playing.
And so tell me about what you're doing with USA Volleyball too, how nice is it too that, you know, you're able to stay in the game, very much involved in the game, without having to put any more miles on the tires.
So I'm the director of beach national teams, so I oversee the senior national teams, and then I as well as the pipeline. So I have kind of work with the manager of high performance, kind of developing a pathway for athletes coming up and make sure we have opportunities So I develop all the policies and procedures in terms of travel stipends for coaches' payments, athlete payments, entry into tournaments, you know, that work with the FIVB regulations. We developed a national team training center in Torrance, California. We have a weight room. We hired a full-time athletic trainer. And then we have a contractor strength and conditioning coach. We put a lot of money, time, and energy into giving the athletes the necessary programmatic support so they can prepare, you know, physically and mentally, emotionally to go and compete against the world. And I think that just comes from, again, that's what I had to do to compete. So it's very, very familiar to me and something that I think reap the rewards of or benefits of. So I try to give the athletes the same sort of opportunities. And I know the challenges, so I try to get funding through USAV or the USFC and or various sponsors or what have you to try to help support our national team athletes and make things as easy, not as easy, but just kind of take away the distractions and allow them to focus on going and competing into the world.
Very cool. And I know that when you retired, that John was obviously on the lookout for a partner. And when I talked to Tri, he said that you kind of gave him a leg up in that competition. He said that you called up John and said, "Hey, you know, this kid Tri is pretty good." What did you know about Tri Bourne, and what made you want to recommend him to John? Because obviously he would be a very different partner from you, being at the time, you know, 24, 25 years old.
So I had the same partner that I started with, Stevie Lee in Hawaii. He knew Tri and kind of had reached out to me and said, "Hey, there's this kid. He's really good." And so I put him in contact with John, and they kind of went from there. I talked with Tri briefly about, like, the sport and what it takes to get there and do this stuff. And I think Tri is also he's mature, I think, for his age as well in terms of his preparation and what he wants to accomplish out of the sport. And so I think that's why it worked with John, because obviously if John was with someone who was 22, 23 and outraging all the time and not really focused on being the best they can be, that he just doesn't have the time for that. He wouldn't be able to say, I'll play with this person for 2-3 years and let them get it out of their system and then we'll dominate, because he's too old. He needs someone who could compete at a high level right away. So
seems like the recommendation has worked out pretty well.
Yeah, no. Tri's an amazing athlete. I mean, he's a good volleyball player. So.
Thanks for listening, guys, and thank you to Sean Scott for taking the time out of his day to hang out with us here on the podcast. And to exit, I will leave you with one of my favorite quotes that I've heard on an AVP call from the finals in New York many years ago. And Casey Patterson and Ty Loomis' first final as a team, they were playing against Sean Scott and Hayden, and I will leave you with this.
Sean Scott during the match, would he try to intimidate him? And you know what he said, Paul? He said, "I won't yell at Sean Scott because I don't want him to eat me."